Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is once again the Writer's Lounge, show number 35, November 12, 2012. I'm your host, Tom Riddell, and we welcome you to the show here on show number 35. And along with us, out of the storms, will be two people tonight, Robin Eduardo, my co-host, and my sometimes co-host, Brian Anderson. And they're both on the East Coast waiting to get on the air, and well, they are on the air, and they're waiting to talk to you. So we'll bring them on shortly. About a quarter after the hour, actually bring Robin on very quickly here after I get through my intro. And, of course, today we have Brian Anderson, Brian D. Anderson, with the Godling Chronicles Book 2. And we had him on last year, and he's on again, and he is really moving ahead here. He's really scooting up those bestseller lists, and we hope that he continues to do that. And you can find us over at tomriddell.com/blog, and that's the Writer's Lounge blog over there, and you can review and look at all of the reviews I've done through the 35 shows, and you can listen to your favorite author up in the upper left-hand corner. When you listen to the Blog Talk Radio player, just click on your author's name, and away you go. You can also contact us at twl11@yahoo.com, and, of course, we're on Facebook, and you can go to the Blog Talk Radio site and click on the Facebook link. Go over there and have a like. And upcoming guest authors. Next time around, Robert Nikpon will be on with Gazpacho. This is also a second book in a series of three. And he will be, second book in a series of four. And he'll be on the next time around, which is, let me look at my calendar here, November 26th. So we're looking forward to that. Also, I want to give a quick promotion to MagicPenWebDesign.com. Offers its clients a simple, effective, and affordable approach to website design development. MagicPenWebDesign promises that your website will be simple and content easy to navigate. So get over there at www.MagicPenDesign.com and go ahead and take the free estimate, and hopefully we can help you out with your book. And you will really like it, because I think Brian will, and Brian, I think, is going to be coming on with Magic Pen along with his publisher, GMTA Publishing, and they are in the queue for that. Okay, as I take a little sip of water here, we are now going to bring on a lady who is amazing. And her name is Robin Eduardo. She's my co-host, and she's been through a very hard time here in the last week, and probably a little bit longer than that, because she is in the eye of the storm there on the East Coast through Sandy. And Sandy really gave a wallop to the East Coast, and I welcome her now onto the show. Robin, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I feel so bad. I mean, we started out really well on the last show, and I was excited and all set up and a very good mood, even though I knew that the storm was already kicking, and we were discussing that, and it was really building and building and building. And even though I knew what I was in for, I did not know what I was in for. And I'll be honest. I mean, I lost power. I lost my phone signal. And it just, from there on out, it was just nuts. And
wow.
Yeah.
I know.
Very interesting thing to go through.
It's kind of ironic that you and Brian are both on today, and you're both from that area.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, share
mm-hmm.
something more than just being writers, being associated with a writer's lounge, that both of you guys live on the Jersey Shore, and both have
mm-hmm.
been impacted by a superstorm mm-hmm. Sandy. And now there's another connection, Robin, and I went and saw Bruce Springsteen last night here in St. Paul with a friend. And as you know, Bruce Springsteen and the Jersey Shore cannot be separated. And many of his songs of his days there on the East Coast where he grew up. And, at the concert, Bruce mentioned the horrific conditions that the people over your way have had to endure.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang a song called My City of Ruins. And he referenced the storm and his deep love for his town, of course. And although the song in its title wasn't written about a storm, I would like to share with you a verse from that song, which somewhat relates to what you and Brian are dealing with there. And the verse here is, "Now the sweet veils of mercy drift through the evening trees. Young men on the corner like scattered leaves. The boarded up windows, the hustlers and thieves, while my brother's down on his knees. My city of ruins, my city of ruins. Come on, rise up. Come on, rise up." And I hope you guys will do that. So you said that most of the people there are experiencing power outages, but there might be some more.
Well, yeah, that's it took me a week before I had my power restored. It took 7 days, a full 7 days. I didn't get it till the evening. And then even after I got my power on, it took another week for some of my friends and neighbors to get their power on. I'm just going to say it just really sucks, because today was a beautiful sunny day, not crazy weather or anything. The temperature was enjoyable, and we're going through this strange phenomena where other local towns to me, and it seems like it is spreading, where people are randomly losing power again. So, I mean, you know, just it's like we're being kicked while we're down, really.
Yeah, that's awful.
You know, I don't want to compare my situation with anybody else, because I definitely had it, even though I am about a block away from the water, but I had it really good compared to so many other people. And I really don't want to make light of the situation, because the devastation is just, well, if I could try to describe it, and I'm sure Brian can too, but you've seen some of the pictures that I posted on my Facebook page, which obviously the audience is not privy to, but, I mean, you could see just even for my immediate neighbors just how bad the storm damage was. And then the further south that you went, it was just worse and worse, because then you're getting into where the barrier islands are, and they were just underwater. And Seaside Heights, Asbury Park, Atlantic City, just so many places, you know, and other smaller, lesser known towns, but I'm naming towns that are, you know, synonymous with the whole Jersey experience. Especially Asbury Park is devastated. Seaside Heights, I mean, I know there's probably not a lot of fans of the Jersey Shore, but, I mean, obviously the town was made famous by that television program, and it's always been an institution, if you're from this area, to go to the Jersey Shore, to go to Seaside Heights. That was the Mecca, you know, every summer, and it's gone. It's gone. The roller coaster is in the ocean, and there's no getting that back. They're going to have to rebuild.
Bruce had mentioned that a lot of it's been washed away, all of his haunts and everything, and just totally washed away. But you guys will rise up. And
I'd also
like to touch on what we were talking about a little bit off the air before we came on the air. mm-hmm. that you mentioned something very important to remember is that even though we live in different sections of the country and we all are human beings, there's some of us that have a different sort of character, if you will, and to mm-hmm. enable us to get through the storms of life, which obviously you're dealing with here. But there's just something special about, and I said, you people out there, because if you take a trip to New Jersey or you take a trip to New York City, you kind of experience the hustle and bustle of people, and they seem rude when you go to interact with them, when mm-hmm. you initially have an interaction with them. But what you find out is that when there's an awful, terrible thing that has happened, such as 9/11 or what you're dealing with now, mm-hmm. all of you people out there come together and really show us what humanity is all about and pulling together and getting things done. And I think you guys deserve a well round of applause for doing that on the East Coast. And I know, because I lived in central New York and moving from there to the Midwest, there is a difference in people. Not saying that we couldn't handle with a disaster out here, but there's a different character associated with the different areas where we live in this country, and I really hope, and after seeing Bruce last night and seeing his energetic show,
mm-hmm.
what one man has done with his life in his early 60s, when he slides across the stage on his knees at mm-hmm. 63, I believe, every word, every verse that he sings, he pours his heart and soul into it. So if you take that one man and you times it by the millions that are out there dealing with this, I think you probably have a good feel for what kind of people they are. So that's what I came away with from last night. And then, of course, you know, dealing with what you guys are doing and listening to the news and hoping your power. Obviously, the power situation has improved, and hopefully we can get everybody back.
Yeah. Yeah, and that does remind me. I mean, you know, thank you for complimenting our tenacity and our well, I've been described as having quote unquote moxie from being a Jersey girl. So, you know, so it's definitely we do have that tough kind of tough and gruff thing going on. But I'll tell you what. I really want to say thank you to all of the people that came out from all across the country to come here and help us, you know, not just the people that came to help on get the power grid up and running again, but just people that came to help dig out and you know, clean up the mess. I mean, it's just... It's almost like a tsunami came through. Maybe not quite to that level, but I mean, it was just crazy to see some of the stuff where it ended up landing once the water receded, and you can actually see that water line and see furniture and things that I know came all the way from Staten Island is now like all the way up in a park, up a hill, and in the middle of the road.
I mean,
I'm laughing because it's so ridiculous, not because it's funny. It's just like, my God, really?
Well, it's your way of basically coping with a situation.
Yeah.
And, once again, I hope everybody pulls out of that. Sounds like you guys are making your way, and as we make our way into the
and with
rest
the help
of
our friends, that's all I could say. You know, everybody pulled together, but as a nation, we all pulled together because a lot of people came from out of state and really helped us out. And my appreciation is definitely, I know my husband and I, we were cheering when we saw the guys coming up the ramp past our house off from Route 35.
Yeah.
Just seeing these, the electric trucks or I don't even know what they're called, but whatever, those cherry picker things coming driving by, we were like, "Yes, we're gonna have power!" And you know, to bring a lot of levity to the situation, I just looked at my husband and I said, "You know what? If zombies ever really did happen, we are so effed." And I'm not gonna say the word, but it was effed. Because we made a game of it and we got through the week, but I'll tell you what, it was really a hustle. And if you weren't on point getting up early and doing what you had to do, and if people didn't help each other out instead of being selfish and cutting each other off and the looting and all that negativity that was on the news, that's such a small factor. The truth is the majority of people pulled together and were really good neighbors helping neighbors and you know. Oh, so anyway,
yep.
Now you're all caught up on that storm.
Yep, we're all caught up.
Give us a break.
I'd like to make an announcement here real quick. Thank everybody for your entries for your books, and we have set up dates. We've notified most of the authors that will be coming on in the next session. And I have a special announcement to make here. Coming up here on the Writer's Lounge over at the blog site, we are going to be bringing on the lady by the name of Lori Hedgepath. She's going to be doing reviews and taking some of the load off for me as we move forward here. And we may even expand in our reviews. And she will be on at some point on the show also to talk about the reviews and what she's going to be doing. So we welcome her. She's from San Diego. Now we've got Seed of Shining Sea here on the Writer's Lounge. And with that, let me get into our introduction to our guest host and the book, The Godling Chronicles, Book 2 of Gods and Elves, was written by Brian D. Anderson and published by GMT Publishing in 2012. And you may purchase it over at Amazon.com, Kindle, and you can visit the author on Facebook and over at the GMTA Publishing site. What I reviewed here regarding Brian's book, to create an interest in a series of books, to continue a story beyond that first sample taste, an author must give a story and its characters a flavor that will hold within the palate and mind of the reader. In Book 2 of the Godling Chronicles, the fans of Book 1 will not be disappointed. The author has done his job, the interest continues, and the story flows excitingly well. In the beginning of Book 2, Gooey has been beaten down by the half-man Herlando, but directly after the horrific fight, Gooey finds himself in a very unlikely place, his home, where, as Brian writes, a fire burned cheerfully and a hot plate of roast lamb and honey split bread was on the table. At the far end of the table sat his father. And this is a very good example of how the author is able to expertly use description of place, surprise, and the stretching of extremes from fight to home in the use of his storytelling tools. And it has been a year, as I said, in waiting to see where Gooey, Kalia, and the gang are headed in their quest to defeat the Dark Knight. And this reviewer predicts that people will be lining up at their favorite bookseller in large numbers to see what happens to this highly likable bunch of characters. Brian Anderson has hit a home run with his tale of gods, elves, and humans, and it's a grand slam for this up-and-coming new author who continues to climb the bestseller list. And with that, best-selling author, Brian D. Anderson. Brian,
yay!
Are you there?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's going on, bud?
Oh, that, you know, y'all were talking about the hurricanes. You know, I live here in Staten Island, but I'm originally from the Gulf Coast. I've been to dozens of these.
Yeah, well, I've been to
Category 3, 4, and 5 storms. And one of the things that I keep hearing is one of the things about the storm, it was a very wet, very large storm, and the
yeah.
And it came in with a high tide, and it caused about a 6 to 8 foot storm surge.
Mm-hmm.
And what I keep hearing is people comparing this thing to a Katrina. And I'm like, you have no idea what you're talking about. A 30-foot wall of water followed by 150-mile-an-hour winds were to ever hit New York. You know that photo of those poor people who lost their houses in Queens?
Yeah.
To the fire because of it. That's what the entire city would look like if something like that were to ever hit here. And we've gone through a lot of hardship, but I remember as a kid, Hurricane Frederick hit us. We didn't have power for a month.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't eat each other afterwards, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
but you know, I think the
every
difference.
Every time one of those big storms like Ivan or Andrew or something like that really hits, there are people that go not just weeks, but months without power because the devastation is so intensely. It's just total devastation. It's not coastal. It goes inland 100 miles. You know? The flooding, when you have a storm surge that is above 20 feet tall, preceding a storm with winds that high, this has been terrible, but the loss of life, considering the size of the storm, was minimal compared to, say, a Katrina. There were people that sadly perished in the storm, but Katrina, thousands of people died. You can't compare the two, you know?
Yeah.
You just can't.
Yeah.
How can you compare to what we're going through to a complete, not just the city of New Orleans, but about a 150-mile stretch of land side to side, back to front, completely destroyed? You know?
Yeah, that's incredible, Brian, that you kind of make a comparison there, and we don't want to lose sight of how horrific that that storm was down there. The Katrina was horrible. It's just one of those.
There weren't bodies floating in the streets of New York. There were in New Orleans, you know?
Brian, I think that it's. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I just wanted to, you know, I didn't want to lose a lot of time here because I want to get to the book. Getting back to the book, if we could you read an excerpt from your book number two?
Certainly. Let me get over here. I haven't gotten the print copies in yet because it just got released a little while ago. And let's see. I'm going to start at a part where Gui, Linus, and everybody, they're just leaving the Temple of Alshar, and they run into, and Gui runs into the Vrakal for the first time. Robin, you'll like the Vrakal. I can't really give away what they are, but, you know, they're pretty neat. Let's see. Gui heard Linus.
Okay.
What is happening right now is they know they're being followed. But they don't know with what, and they're trying to ambush what's following them. So, Gui heard Linus as the elf neared the creature. Linus had not spotted it yet, but Gui was certain he soon would. How could he not? He was practically on top of it, but it was soon clear he had missed it entirely. Linus continued past the creature, showing no sign he had noticed it. Gui realized the hunters had become the hunted. From the east, Gui heard two more of the creatures closing in on Stentos' position. He knew he had to decide what to do. Linus, it's a trap, Gui yelled at the top of his lungs. His legs burst to life as he sped towards Stentos. The creatures revealed themselves just as Stentos came into view. The figures were that of a man, but that was the only thing they had in common. They wore tattered clothes blackened with grime and decay. Their faces were burnt, misshapen, and covered with deep scars, as if they had been assembled from the rotting corpses of a dozen dead men. But despite their outward appearance, their movements were unearthly, their speed unmatched by any Gui had seen save Lee. They were on Stentos before he knew they were there. Each beast held a cruel dagger in hand, and with them they slashed at the elf's throat. Stentos only barely avoided death by falling back onto the ground. But this only put him at a greater disadvantage. One of the creatures moved and plunged the dagger into the elf's chest. But Gui got there just before the fatal blow could be struck and removed the creature's head with one swift stroke. Thick black blood poured from the beast's neck as the body fell. Gui turned his attention to the second creature that was already in striking distance. The creature struck at Gui's heart, but the power that flowed through him allowed him to easily avoid the attack. He brought his sword down across the creature's chest, splitting it open and sending it tumbling to the ground. But to Gui's dismay, this did not end the battle. No sooner had the creature landed when it sprung to his feet and charged again, this time at the elf. The creature slashed at the left arm of Stentos, who deftly moved aside and spun around, bringing his long knife across its back. But this did nothing to slow it down, as the creature also spun, swinging its own knife wildly. This time the blade struck home and slashed across the elf's ribs. Stentos groaned and staggered back. Gooey knew this must end now. Linus was alone with one of these creatures, and he knew he must hurry to his aid. The head, he thought, and aimed his blade at the creature's neck. It found its mark, and the beast fell. "Go back to the others," Gooey commanded, and tore off in the direction of Linus. He found the elf 300 paces north, kneeling beside the dismembered body of the third creature. Dismembered except for the head.
Good. Very good. And that's just a sample of what this young man, or this young man, younger than me, of course, but I hear it's been a whirlwind of busy for you, Brian, since book one came out. And can you share with our listeners what the experience has been like? What has
it's
your expectations
been
that?
Well, it's been amazing. I mean, since we re-released the book under GMTA, and we changed the cover, we did some work on the interior, on some of the content, had the book reproofed and re-edited and then re-released. It started, sales almost like from the first week or two started picking up. And about 2 weeks into it, it hit the top 100 Amazon bestsellers list. And it just kept going from there, and it climbed from, in the 90s to the 80s to the 50s. And, by the time book two was released, it was in the top 25. And book two has just been unbelievably successful. Right now it's number 13. It's brought on the Epic Fantasy. It's number 60 on all of science fiction. It's just been amazing.
Wow.
The feedback has been wonderful. It's almost like I just can't really believe how well it's been, things have been going. It's like you expect to wake up and it stops. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think also that it's important to everybody out there to know, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are kind of scratching their heads right now and wondering, is this guy able to live on his own with the books coming in as far as the income? We won't get into the specific income, but I hear from you from time to time, and you've indicated to me that when somebody asks you what you do now, you tell them, "I'm a writer." And the reason you're a writer is because you can make a decent living from the sales that you've made so far.
Absolutely.
With so that's a good testament to everybody out there that wants to do what you're doing, Brian. And I really applaud you for sticking with it and moving ahead as being a writer. And it's just great. It's just fantastic.
Well,
I can't tell you.
And understand, the vast majority of my sales at this point are on Amazon. And that's only one market. And when I say I'm in the top 100 and it's sitting, the book sitting there next to J.R. Martin's and Tolkien's and all that, but they sell books worldwide, man. They sell in stores all across the country, everybody. They're selling millions of books. But in that small market, you can actually do pretty well. And
yeah.
You just got to keep at it and promote yourself and don't give up and just really believe in what you're doing. Take it seriously. Listen to the feedback. Listen to what people are saying you're doing right and what you're doing wrong, and react accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Robin, you got anything?
If you get somebody that says that you have a problem in your story, really look at it. Don't get offended by it, See if they're right or not, because they may have a point, If you have a fan that says, "Hey, I found bad grammar here, bad, this there," you know what? Go back, look, see if it's something you can do. If it's especially with the e-books, you can just re-upload it and fix it. There's nothing to it.
Yeah, that's the simplest thing. Definitely receiving feedback from your fans. Actually, it is my opinion that when you are critiqued by people that you have no type of association with, not family members, not close friends, not co-authors who are maybe hoping to swap reviews. I mean, you know, I don't want to come down hard on anybody, you know, because by any means necessary. I mean, you know what I mean? You do what you can to promote yourself, but you need to... Right. Well, you're right. And you need to listen to that feedback from the reader. That's the most important thing, because you could learn a lot, because they have no, you know, horse in this race. You know, they're just there. They want to be entertained. They know what they like. And if you're too close to your own work, so it's good to have feedback from you know what I mean?
One of the things,
unbiased sources
for about every aspect of what I've written at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all do. And even the people who've liked it had, you know, has had their little critiques to say, and I really do want to hear it. The only thing that that happens that is really kind of a nothing I can do about kind of thing, there's a lot of fantasy fans, because this is fantasy. But it's not like a George Martin, you know. It's not Game of Thrones. It's not that kind of high, epic, only for adult fantasy. And if somebody buys it with that kind of expectation, they are going to be disappointed. You know,
right.
I mean, because it's just, you know, if it was a Game of Thrones or a Lord of the Rings, it would be 600 pages long, not 300.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's when you chalk it up to just that. That's when you chalk it up to you can't please everybody, you know.
Well,
so.
Then there's some things I saw that I wanted to mention. There's another author out there. Last name I think is pronounced Doty or Dottie or something like that. A guy wrote a book called Child of the Sword, and his is in the top 100. It's right up there in the same like category as my book. And I noticed the guy got some great reviews, you know, 5, 4, a couple 3-star, just great, great reviews. One-star review that just raked him over the coals. And, you know, I always wondered, did it upset the guy? Because he had, like, 30 other great reviews, and this one that just said he was the worst thing that ever happened to literature.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking, I just got the feeling that somebody had it out for him, you know.
Yeah.
That happens. That's a legitimate thing that you're bringing up, actually. That's legitimate. I do not pay attention 100%. Well, I do and I don't with 1-stars, because it all depends. Is the review, even though it's a totally negative review, but is it touching on important points that you could, you know, take something from it and apply it to improving your craft? I mean, that's the whole – or are they bashing you because does it come across as like a personal animosity against the author and not the book, you know?
And it really did. Mm-hmm. It really did come across that way when I read that guy's that one. I kind of like felt bad for him. I almost wanted to write him and say, you know, sorry that happened, you know, because you could tell when you're reading the review that it was somebody who hadn't read the work. They only had... you could tell it was somebody out to get this poor guy. And apparently the guy has several out, and all of them have gotten great reviews, and he does real well. You know, he's like
and
4 or 5 books out there.
Yeah. You can't respond
Brian,
to those.
I was going to ask you about, you're talking about, you know, evolving here a little bit in your characters in your book. You know, certainly Gooey and Kaylee have developed quite a following. How have you evolved? I would like to know how you evolved as a writer. Is your approach any different than it was in book one? What challenges did you face in writing book two to basically bring it to another level? And I know you're very, you pay attention, as we've been saying here, to people that criticize. But how have you evolved as a writer, do you think, in this story?
Well, I mean, the challenges are actually because the story becomes so much bigger. I mean, book one was an introduction. I introduced the character. I put a little, you know, the romance and the action and all that in there, and I kind of give you an idea of what everything, you know, what the story's about. Into book two, you know, it gets more complex because now you have a lot more subplots. And what's challenging is to keep them all separate, but looking down the road and figuring out how to tie them back together. Because you can't just separate, because that, you know, that now I'm into book three. I'm like maybe 10 chapters into writing the third one, and it's even more complex than the second one. And
how do you, and Brian, how do you do that? How do you separate? Do you use notes or outlines as far as keeping your subplots running smoothly?
Well, what I tend to do, because I keep terrible notes, I'm not very good at it, and I rarely can't follow my own notes, is I use a lot of diagrams, you know, where almost like family tree type stuff. And then what I'll do is I'll stop and I'll go back and reread my work and refresh my memory on what's happened.
Okay.
And I have the main thing I try to keep is lists of names, recurring characters, places. See, right now the world has gotten so much bigger. Whereas in book one, I mean, I considered having a map drawn, but I just really didn't know what the entire world looked like, only the little pieces that I had written about so far.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And now that we're into the second book is done, the third book's being written, and I have that one more or less mapped out, now I'm to a point where I kind of have an idea what the whole world looks like.
How many books do you see you writing in this series, Brian?
You know, it originally was going to be like three or four, and it's turned into there's no way I can get it done in three or four. It's going probably like six to eight books.
Okay.
Hey, that's great.
Well, I mean,
I like long series, but as long as you're
going to
finish it.
Right. Well, you know, yeah, I will finish it. And honestly, I could keep writing about this particular world forever. I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
my choice is to, as an independent author, if I write a 600 to 800 page novel, and
mm-hmm.
I don't mind doing that, you know, it just take me twice as long to write it.
Yeah.
But I don't mind doing it. I don't mind the work. It's that when it comes out to the reader, the electronic version, the price of it isn't affected that much. But the paperbacks, because of the printing costs, and that, you know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
with an all-independent publisher, you got to take that into account, that
yeah.
you have a $30, $40 paperback. I don't care how good the book is. Who's
mm-hmm.
going to buy a $30 paperback that doesn't have the answers
yeah.
to life, the universe, and everything within its pages?
Yeah.
How do you replace with either writing a little bit shorter and breaking the story up into shorter parts to make it more affordable
mm-hmm.
for a reader to, you know, to mm-hmm. purchase?
Well, psychologically,
you know,
too, I've actually read a few articles here and there where people have done some studies, and they're saying that the readers actually, for electronic books, they do prefer
mm-hmm.
shorter works. So, I mean, that works in your favor, too. And I know as a fan of series, that's always a good thing, you know, to do that anyway. But, yeah, they're saying that instead of even like an 80 to 120,000-word book, people prefer for e-readers even like a smaller number than that, like 60,000 to, you know, 60 to 80. Thousand words.
Unfortunately, for me to put to try to get to
mm-hmm.
60,000 words with this particular with this particular book, it would be impractical. Like book three is going to be much longer than book one. Book two
mm-hmm.
is a little
mm-hmm.
shorter than book one was. Not a lot shorter, just a little.
Oh really?
And I think it's like 90 something thousand words compared to 114. So it's
mm-hmm.
roughly the same length.
Wow.
But book three is shaping up to be about like 150,000-160,000 word book. I'm looking at it realistically.
Mm.
So I have four stories.
Yeah.
Well, now I have like three or four stories going on at the same time.
It's growing in scope.
Yeah.
Feed me, see more.
Well, and you got to, some of the stories aren't as important as others. Some of them are very minor
mm-hmm.
subplots, but you still got to touch on them.
Yeah, because people want, they want to know what happened, you know, hey, I remember this happened, you know, two books ago, and then they dropped the ball. What happened? You know, they want to know. So
that's me not doing my job as an author if I don't keep track of my own story.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, Brian, speaking of an author, I want to put you in a different frame of mind right now. I want you to take you from the position as a writer and turn you into a reader. What is it that you think appeals most to the readers of the Godling Chronicles, and what gets them to want to read book two? What do you think it is that appeals the most? Besides myself, who I'm deeply in love with Kalia, but you all know about that. So.
Well, I really think it's the same thing with any form of story-based entertainment, whether it's books, movies, or anything like that. There's really three elements that are required, and that's action, adventure, and romance, and especially in this genre. Now, I'm going to bring you back to something I mentioned the last time I was on the show as a guest. Remember when the prequels for Star Wars came out?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, number one, Jar Jar Binks was terrible, but that's beside the point. it was something missing, you know, nobody could put their finger on what it was. I mean, let's face it, the action scenes were unbelievable. The adventure was, you know, and you're getting resolutions and questions you had for years since you were a kid and first saw these movies. But one thing it didn't have was romance. You had Padme
involved with Jar Jar Binks, but I kind of liked the character, but I know it turned off a lot of people. But
well, I thought he was like an Ewok on steroids. he was far too cute. But anyway, no. The thing is, you know, that you didn't. That was the element in that particular story that was missing. You didn't have the romance. Now, what I think people, when they're reading the Godling Chronicles, I mean, let's face it, it's not meant to be life-changing literature. You're not supposed to. It's not meant to teach you a lesson. I mean, and the story is pretty typical for the genre. You know, good versus evil, blah 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 blah. I didn't try to reinvent the wheel, but I think because I added elements, all three of those elements, and I make it accessible to not just you know, fantasy readers. I think it makes it more accessible to, readers outside the genre. You know, you don't have to have a thesaurus and a dictionary and everything to read the book. I wrote it at a reading level that is just easy to read. It's not Dostoevsky. It's not Tolstoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's not me trying to show you how smart I am. You know, it's just me trying to tell a story in a way that's interesting, that's fun to read, that you don't, you know, that you don't feel worn out when you put the book down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I was out to do. And I think that's what's really gotten some good response.
Right.
Yeah. Well, people are relating to it.
The characters are extremely likable, and I think that's a big part of it when you do create a character. And, of course, like you say, keeping diagrams and notes or whatever you do as a writer to keep those characters in line with their true personalities is another struggle that we have to do as writers. But I was wondering, Brian, with all your success, and you are successful, thank God, Brian, because you used to call me around midnight sometimes and say, Tom, what do you think of this? Tom, what do you think of that? True story, you call me at midnight to ask me and to explain to me. One night at midnight, he says, Tom, do you know that I'm selling over in India like hotcakes? India? Wow. Okay. How many books? 200 or 300 books, Tom. Oh, cool, Brian. Now I'm going to try to get back to sleep, but because you've got me so excited, I'm not going to sleep for another couple hours because I, like you, Brian, am really excited for you. And saying I would like to say, like to ask you, how are friends and family reacting to your success of being a best-selling author? Yes, he is, folks, a best-selling author.
They've been real supportive, especially my wife and my father, and all my friends. They're really happy for me. You know, I mean, and it's, you know, the thing is, it's there's a lot of places to go from here.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot more for me to do. The good news is that, you know, there's, you know, people out there that I have access to now to speak to, guys like, you know, Donald Capps and some other writers that will, you know, that when I write them, write me back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really super. That's super neat, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I won't, you know, like guys like Winston Groom who are from my hometown, you know, and they've heard of me now. You know,
mm-hmm.
They've heard of me because I'm from their hometown, not because I'm famous or anything. Just, you know, because of that. Well, I mean, you know, when you're from a town, of, you know, that small town, you know, anybody does anything.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so cute.
Okay, keep it to yourself. Get a room.
Oh, boy. No, you can't get a room. There's no room.
No, everybody wants to be there with Brian. So, no, there is no room at the end. But, Brian, we know you're going to go on from the Godling Chronicles at some point. What are your plans beyond the Godling Chronicles? And I feel like I'm talking to J.K. Rowling now, asking her what comes after Harry Potter. So what are you going to do after this?
Well, actually, I do have a storyline in mind. And after I'm hoping to release book 3 either at the end of March or the beginning of April. And I'm looking at the pace at what I'm writing right now and the editing, proofing, beta reading and all that, how long mm-hmm. that takes. And I don't want to make readers who enjoy in the series wait for, you know, a year if they don't have to. You know, that's
right.
I'm not going to base those decisions off, you know, what time of year is the best time to release something. You know, that's to me a
mm-hmm.
little bit,
mm-hmm.
that's too much of a being a suit, not being a writer. But I have an idea for a story that I'm working on. This one is a little bit of a departure from the fantasy genre. Still in the spirit, but after the release of book 3, I might take some time to do some research on it. It's more of a sci-fi mystery thriller.
Oh, cool.
It's, you know, I can tell you kind of the premise for it, you know, because all I have is kind of an idea, and without characters and a point of view, all you really have is, you know, a little bit of an idea. Sort of, that Homo sapiens weren't that, you know, the aliens, the ancient aliens that everybody keeps talking about, they're not
mm-hmm.
aliens. They were from here. They were just a more advanced species of human who decided to leave the planet to the Homo sapiens because their presence was keeping them from evolving.
Mm.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Well, how does that make you, Brian? How does it make you feel to step outside of the story of Godling Chronicles? There's got to be a little bit of anxiety there. Of course, you haven't started with this project yet, but once you do, there's got to be a little bit of anxiety, as I'm sure J.K. Rowling would feel by writing something other than Harry Potter.
With the poor reception her last book got, and I feel bad for her because she, you know, I mean. I guess people were expecting it to be another Harry Potter, and, you know, I mean, and I've heard some critical, literary, you know, some real good literary critics give it high marks, you know,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, if you expect something that's not Harry Potter to be Harry Potter, you're going to be disappointed.
Sure.
Yeah, that's when you toss in a pseudonym. That's what, you know, that's what I advocate is using a completely, you know, publishing under a different name.
Well,
and then you could always let it slip later
that,
on, but just to see, you know, how it goes.
Well,
I also think that financially, she has enough money to last her for the rest of her life.
Well, yeah,
over.
Yeah.
So
but just out of curiosity.
Yeah, you know, but here's the thing, though. If you have been associated with Harry Potter for how many
mm-hmm.
years now,
mm-hmm.
and you still have your pride as an author, and, you know,
I know.
And your own ego, you want to be known as a writer, not just the creator of Harry Potter, and I think that's why she did that.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a trap we all fall into, not we as an I, because I'm not writing a series, but when you develop a series as a writer, I think there's a great amount of anxiety to step outside of that series, and then sometimes they keep them going. I know an author here in Minnesota, the name right now escapes me, but he's written a series with a character by the name of Cork O'Connor, and he seems to not be able to step outside of that because there's such a demand for that, and for that story to continue. It's a never-ending ending of a lifetime, basically, that this guy is writing. But I think that's good when you can fall into it, but I think at some point the story has to end, especially when you're writing about what you're writing about with the Godling Chronicles. But, Brian, what I'd like to ask you now is, if you could sit down and talk with a famous writer, who would it be, and what would be the first question you would ask them?
I'd speak to Homer.
Homer? Who?
Homer?
Homer Simpson?
No.
No, Homer.
Oh, okay.
Homer Simpson.
The Iliad, and the Odyssey. The stuff written back like in 300 BC. I'd ask him what life was really like back then. You know,
yeah.
If I was going to speak to any writer, I'd speak to Homer, somebody who was there during the crucible of our Western civilization.
Okay. I'm not sure who Homer is, but the only Homer I know is the one I just heard.
Homer Simpson.
Have you ever heard of the Odyssey, Tom?
No, I haven't.
He wrote the Odyssey.
The Iliad. Tom, you didn't have to read those books in high school. I remember. I hated it. But
I don't remember that. I remember Homer.
It was all a blur. It was all a blur.
But he would be somebody, like I said, that was there to witness a point in history. And if I could speak to somebody like that and give a firsthand account, oh, my God, you know? I mean, I can imagine it.
Yeah. Well, I think anybody from multiple tiers of eras in our ancient history, this is so cool.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Any writer.
And where... I mean, to find out where he got these stories, how he heard them, were they to hear him tell the story, does it match up to what we're reading today about these stories, or did people over thousands of years add more in?
You're right.
It would answer so many questions that scholars have been debating since the Roman times.
You're right. You are absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be fun. Brian, the marketing of your book is another story in itself in the success that you've had. Can you share some of your secrets? Some, not all, but some of your secrets with
us? I'll share all of them. You know what? And I've even made offers out there to people who are struggling. You know, if you want to ask me questions, you know what I mean? Because, you know what I mean, that, you know, it's what works for me. I'm happy to tell you. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm not like that. It's consistency, uh-huh. consistency. And when you're finished being consistent, do it some more. Every uh-huh. day, be out there putting your name out to somebody. Every day. You should post something somewhere at least 5-10 times a day. And not just Facebook. Don't limit yourself to the easy ones like Facebook. There are book clubs, and you got to be careful with the book clubs not to be too self-promoting because they get angry about
spammers. Spam, those evil spammers.
Yeah. But, you know what I mean? But you still can be part of these book clubs and let them know that you're a writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And you should. You should actually join groups and it's that camaraderie because other writers will want to help promote you. You help promote them. I mean, it's not, you know, I talked before about that whole circle jerk of trading five-star reviews. I'm not down with that. But being in a community of like-minded people that are, they're going to help boost you and cheer you on, you know, they enjoy your success because it gives them hope for their own.
Well,
so, of course,
you know, that, and be very careful
other.
About the cover of your book. I think more than anything, I swear to God, Tom, I think more than anything else.
Yes.
That,
and your cover's awesome, by the way. I love it.
It is. Absolutely
awesome. I mean, it looks like it was done by a Russian painter, or he does photo manipulation.
Mm-hmm,
but it's
mm-hmm.
really, really good. And the second cover is done by this, that guy was French, is done by a Russian girl, she goes under the name Celindy. Both of them are talented, talented artists. But
mm-hmm.
I think more than anything, the success of book one was really kick-started by a striking cover that made people want to at least take a look inside.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Absolutely.
It grabs their attention, piques their curiosity, and, absolutely.
Grabs them. You said it. Brian, we've got a little bit of time left. We got only a little bit of time left here, and we'd like to wrap this up. Well, once again, always a pleasure to have you guys on. Both of you, of course, are a big part of the success of the Writer's Lounge. And I would like to ask you, where can people find you on the Internet? Of course, at some point here, Brian, you might have a website, right?
Yeah, I'm working with you and your company. Putting my personal website together, which we're hoping to have that soon. In the meantime, I post on Facebook, author Brian D. Anderson. There is a Goblin Chronicles page there, but it's named after the first book, so I'm going to kind of start weaning off using that one. And I have a Brian D. Anderson on at the Blogspot website.
And, of course, over at gmtpublishing.com, you can find him over there also.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. Brian, it's been a pleasure, my friend. I love you. I love Robin. You people. You have done great. And
there's no rooms. Tom, there's no rooms.
Now I'm going to let you and Robin run off to find a room together. But
no rooms.
Yeah, there's no room for Brian. So anyway, Brian. Love you, guy, and we'll be listening to phone calls from you around midnight anytime. You can call me up, okay?
All right, brother.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah,
bye.
There we go. So there goes Brian looking for a room. so we've touched on J.J. Binks, Homer Simpson. We've talked about the storms. We've talked about books. We've talked about a lot of things on the Writer's Lounge tonight. And I failed to mention the call-in numbers, but in the next show, you can give us a call at 626-213-5613 or toll-free 877-878-1436. And we'll be having Robert Nikpon on once again.
Yay.
Another author is making a big move up the ladder of success, and along with Brian here, and he was on the Writer's Lounge last year around the same time. So we've got... authors that are doing very well, Robin. And I'm going to put you on the spot again, Robin. What is it that we say?
No, don't do that to me.
You don't remember.
Because the minute you start, it flies right out of my head every single time.
Here, I'll start you off. Good reading and... Good writing. What do we do? What do we do here?
And talk about books. I don't
and talk about J.J. Binks.
Oh, I'm a mess. I am a mess. I am sorry.
I still
you
love
do this
you.
To me.
Okay.
I love you too.
And as we say at the Writer's Lounge, good reading and good writing. And see, I followed you up at that time. And we'll see you next time on the Writer's Lounge. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thank you. It's dark as night in the middle of the day. Your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. One beautiful morn, he said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds will part and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out. And it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun begins. The rain will